Hey, podcast family, it's Sophie, and you are listening to Ethnically Speaking.
I think the most ridiculous name I've actually encountered isn't that ridiculous. I'm going to say it anyway. If she's watching, she's watching. But it's Beauty. And I just feel like names like that really set up a child, you know, in a good and bad way. Some might say the face and the name don't match.
I'm your girl, Sophie Hannah.
I'm Luandi Yasmin.
I'm Anissa. Welcome to episode 7 of Ethnically Speaking. So we are 4 fabulously smart, opinionated, curious, and highly melanated women representing the UK. We're here to discuss everything and anything affecting our communities, from current affairs to pop culture and everything in between. Nothing is off limits and we always keep it 100. So forget tiptoeing around topics and technically speaking, because today we are Ethnically Speaking. Now, Linda, what is on your mind, girl?
Ladies. So, it's been just over 2 months since we had the whole Blackout Tuesday thing, right? Now, a non-profit organisation called Women in Control, shout out Nadia Khan, their founder, they have done a little bit of research into the UK music industry. So they're looking at musicians, they're looking at live music events, and just people from the bottom of the top to the music industry. And a report of theirs called hashtag Seat at the Table has found that Black women, we hold 0 CEO positions within the music industry and only about 3% board positions. So I need to know, what do you think, what kind of effect do you think this has on the music industry as a whole, this lack of representation, and what do you think we can do to change it?
Well, I'm going to speak for myself and say what I think, not what I know is happening, but more what I think is happening. And I'm just going to take it from the standpoint of, I think whenever there is someone, whenever there's power, right, and the people in power don't look like, I guess, the people below them, then there's always, how do I phrase it? When there's someone in power and there's somebody below them, the person in power who doesn't look like those initial people won't care about their issues as much or will marginalize them in a certain way. I don't know how to explain it. Like they, because everyone at the top, once again, what I think, because most of the CEOs at the top may be white men, they won't care, I guess, about their Black female artists or their Black male artists or about the Black people, Black females that are working within the wider music industry and their issues, their challenges, what's stopping them from doing the best that they can at work, because they don't relate to those issues in the same way and they're probably not even thinking about those kind of issues. So what initially I think is happening by not having more Black women in these high-held positions within the music industry is that people who look like them, who are in the music industry, their stories are not being told, their voices are not being heard. What I think we can do to combat it, it's kind of like the same old thing of saying, like, we need to get more people in power, but we also need more allyship. And I know this is a bit off tangent, but I think it's almost similar to, like, the whole colorism thing we were talking about last week, about, like, Black women, there being more light-skinned women in the hip-hop and misogynoir, in the sense that I feel like sometimes when there aren't Black women present, we get another person's idea of what a Black woman should be or what a Black art should be. And I feel like that's what we've seen pumped through the music industry rather than an authentic story. But I feel like I'm on a thought train. Does anybody want to jump in?
No, I hear what you're saying. Like, I feel, from what you're saying, I felt like a few weeks ago, like it was in the news about Misha B and Alexandra Burke and Leon Pinnock from, what's her group? Little Mix.
I just wanted to see you struggle.
So, Anyways, those ladies came forward and they were saying, oh, it's difficult for black women. And you're like, well, like you're saying, Anissa, if there's no one representing you at the high levels, no wonder why they're asking you to mold into, you know, having straight hair, don't be too black, don't be too this, smile more. Because it's people who might have a conscious or unconscious bias trying to tell them the best way to be. And I think now we're starting to see these are why we have these problems, because we don't have any representation that is making decisions on these people's behalf.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think those statistics are actually petrifying because, Linda, you really said zero.
Zero.
Not zero.
Not one single CEO. That's wild. And I think it's I think for consumers, for us who listen to music, I don't think people really understand how much work and how much control goes into just one artist, because there's a whole group of people that decides you know, an artist's look and their sound and the company they keep and all of these things. And when you are when you don't have the final say on those things, and the person who does have the final say on it has never experienced your culture but is in control of how your culture is going to be presented, I think that makes for trivial representation of black artists.
There you go. No wonder you summed up what I was thinking back and pull my thoughts together.
It's true though, but it's a huge mess, because if you think about it, how many, okay, so I hate to throw it out here, but we only have a handful of black female artists in the UK music industry. And I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna concentrate on things like rap and R&B. And of those handful of black artists, they are particular ones that are pushed further than others. And typically those are the lighter skinned girls. And I'm not trying to bring colorism into this topic, but it just goes
it
to
never
show.
Left.
It never left, did it? It's been sitting here waiting for us. But the fact of the matter is that there's no one like us at the top making these decisions. And not only is it there's going to be an issue with colorism, but once again, we are going to be forced to kind of play out everything from a male point of view and not a woman's point of view. That's why you get all these female rappers. I'm talking about actually, I'm not just America here as well. All it is the JJ this and the JJ that. That's not what I wanted to say, but you know, we've got to keep it PG.
And their big butts.
And their big butts, because it's men. And it's, I think what we're doing right now is the only thing that can be done, because I know women that are, you know, stepping out and becoming artist managers. I'm seeing women that are stepping out and, you know, handling certain business within record labels. I'm still yet to see women who are, you know, open up grassroots live music venues, but I know things are difficult now with Rona. But I think the things that we can do, we are currently doing them.
Yeah. I think it's also really interesting, and I know Luanda's going to jump in on this, but something that I thought was really interesting is that for a lot of these trade unions that the study was talking about, it's not that there's a lack of women. So, for example, there was the ISM trade union. They have like a male CEO, a male chairperson, but then their board is 41% women. Their team members are 71% women, but their black women make up 1% of teams. And it brings into this idea of intersectionality. So when we talk about feminism, intersectionality, people are starting to say the issue that we're having with feminism is that really it's only promoting white females. Like, you can see white females at this company saying, oh, well, women make up 41% of our board. Women make up 71% of our teams. But I'd have been like, and what's the breakdown of those women? Because out of that, you've got the percentage of the white. So it's not a step forward for all women when all women aren't represented. And that's how we seem to be in society. And I think that's what we're seeing in these companies. They're like, yeah, but our women are 50-50. But it's like, yeah, but it's only one type, so it doesn't count.
Well, dare I say, you know, some could argue that at least it's a step forward in the right direction by including women in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't say that. I would say that. But
do you know what I'm honestly wondering, though? Because if it's that high number, like with the 70% being just on the general staff, why aren't these women of colour being promoted to these higher positions? Like, that's my next question. Like, why is
that not happening? Well, this is the thing. It's 71% women, but only 1% of that 71% are black. And I think that's where we need to start looking about, like, what we're going to do for the future. Well, first of all, we need to start taking accountability and understanding that there's a problem. Like, someone has gone to the well, it's not the burden, but someone has gone taken to task to put together this survey and this study. So now it's time for them to start looking and say, okay, there is a problem. What do we do? Where are women stopping at in our system? So it seems that we have a lot of women who are team members. We have a lot of women that are making it to the board. Why is no one making it higher than that? And to start breaking down, how do we then start doing it? Do we bring in a quota and start to say there must be at least 10 women on the board, and out of that there must be 5 from ethnic minorities? Like, sometimes you have to put these quotas positive in, because people people won't start doing it themselves until they say, actually, as a company, we need to make sure that certain groups are represented, because subconsciously people are going to hire people that look like them. And I don't think it's always down to racism. Yeah. It's not always down to racism.
It's just a thing. It's just something that happens. And exactly. People sometimes, I think, people forget to include other people unless you're told about it. But I think the difference is when you are, when you're someone from a marginalized group already, you're already considering everyone else because you've had to do that for your whole life. And no one considers you because you've never, ever been part of the picture. So I think in terms of... in terms of progress and what people can actually do, I think anyone that posted a black square, anyone that hashtagged BLM, need to actually commit to real change, because these words are nice, but they're empty if there's no action behind them. And, you know, if you think about something like, if you have a business and a business wants to open another branch, there are logistics in place. You map out the logistics of that next step. So if you are a business and you say, we have a problem here with representation, show me the paperwork and the timeline that you're going to use to fix it, instead of just tweeting something to give me the impression that you're here to be progressive. Show me the paperwork and show me the timeline. By 2025, we want A, B and C. Yeah.
But you know what? Here's the thing. I'm really happy that we're talking about this, because if you guys remember, there was a huge hoopla with regards to Channel 5, Channel 4, BBC. I remember quite a few of the radio stations as well. They kind of published their figures with regards to representation of black people. They didn't quite go into detail of black women. Yeah, it was all over LinkedIn. And you know, loads of them, Channel 5 made a statement, Channel 4 made a statement. Like, I think the more popular this particular report, hashtag see at the table, is, and the more noise it makes, then the more likely we are to see a change in the UK music industry, because the mainstream media, broadcast media, have all, you know, said, oh, you know, BBC have put this huge kind of statement out that they're going to make sure they include more diversity behind the camera as well as in front of the camera, and other channels followed suit, and so did other radio stations too. So I think the more popular this movement is, the more people speak up about it, then the more likely that, you know, record labels will be looking at their demographics and seeing where they can hire upwards. And I think that's what we just need to do, keep making noise.
My question is, though, do you think this could be a bit of a cultural thing? The more that you've just said it, like, it's really just hit my head, in the sense of maybe the reason why we haven't had great numbers of black women in these spaces is because black women just haven't chose to be in these spaces.
Absolutely not.
I don't believe that whatsoever.
But Linda, I'm not just... No, guys, honestly, they're my train of thought.
Sorry, you want us to engage with it first. Sorry.
No, yeah, fair enough if we're talking about now and within the last 20 years, but I'm thinking, like, historically, if I'm going back to my mom, if I'm going back to my grandma, if I'm going back to their generation, how many black women at that point were trying to be in the media space? I don't know, but what I'm saying is, I don't know if it would be as much as it is now. So maybe historically, that's why we haven't been represented in those spaces.
I'm going to interact with your thought, right?
Please.
Because don't forget, right?
For example, entangle with it.
I'm going to entangle with it well. I don't know if you know, there's an artist called Burna Boy, yeah?
Yeah.
And his mum is his manager. And she historically worked with one of the biggest artists to ever come out of Nigeria called Fela Kuti. Yeah, she worked with, yes, exactly. So I don't think it's a case where only now women have wanted to have a leg to stand on in the music industry. I don't think it's only now that women wanted ownership of, you know, live music events. I don't think it's only now that women wanted to be part of record labels or, you know, agencies where they promote talent. I think women have always wanted this. I think black women historically have always been go-getters, regardless of what society has said to us, well, regardless of what society has said to us, has, you know, is as far as we can go. So I don't think it's just something something that's happening now. I think the difference is now more people are talking about it. We have the internet. We have our own outlets. Before, we were controlled by mainstream media. Let's not lie. For a while in the UK, there were only 5 TV channels. I remember everyone got gassed when Channel 5 came through, you know. But now, let's not lie, it was BBC 1 to 4, and then Channel 5 came, we were like, rah. Then we got things like Sky and Cable. But you know, looking at that, now we have our own outlets. We have blogs on Instagram that have more flat followers and more influencers than some of these mainstream media accounts. So because of the digital age we're living in, we are have our own voices, and mainstream media have to take notice, which is why I do not agree with what you said, Anissa.
See, that's what, see, no, but that was a good point that you made about Burna Boy and his mother and manager, because I didn't even know anything like that. And then even now I'm thinking, but was that happening in the UK, or was that be happening back? Because then it's like the whole Western thing, I think, adds another layer. That's what I'm just thinking.
Because I don't know, like, the fact is, we're talking about people in the music industry, like, behind the scenes, but let's just take into account how many people want to be in front of it. If we're thinking about how many people from Black and ethnic minorities want to be singers or producers or whatever, I can only assume there's that many people who want to get involved behind the scenes but just haven't been given the opportunity, because from the past to what we see now is like, oh, you can make us money, so we're happy to put you in front, but making the big money in the back, no, let's save that for the white bitches.
That's exactly why I was saying what I said earlier about how they're going to represent you, even though they've never experienced what it's like to be you. Because I think, you know, everyone loves that narrative of the ex-Disney star going wild. But really, most of the time, I always just see it as someone, as an artist, who finally has leverage over the way that they're presented. Because we don't know what's going on in the contracts until the contracts end. And we see the real version of these people. Yep. So even what you were saying, Linda, about we have our own platforms now, you can actually, you know, have an authentic version of yourself and of your art on those platforms, instead of someone being like, oh, well, you don't tick this box that includes like 3 bullet points for every Black artist that we have, then I don't want you.
I think it's important to see women, especially Black women, in these seats of power, because it inspires us to believe that we can do it too. Yep. Like my niece, I have a few nieces. One of them's 15 and she looks up to like Zendaya. She looks up to Maya Jama. Like she sees these people who have power and influence. And for her, she's just like, I know I can go after my dreams because they went after theirs. And Maya Jama's influencing a lot of people right now. A lot of people. I don't know if you guys saw. She's been influencing our favorite Canadian rapper, Drake. So Drake came out with a song. What was it called? Only You Freestyle. And it was featuring Hedy One. And in it, he stirred up controversy because he name dropped Maya Jama, calling her
Sweet One.
Yep. Now, the Twitter sphere, or should I say Black Twitter probably, went crazy because everyone wanted to know, what does Maya Jama's ex Stormzy have to say about it? To date, they haven't said anything. They haven't made any comments. But rumors have it that Drake messaged Maya Jama 2 years ago while she was still in a relationship with Stormzy. Apparently, she didn't respond to it. We will never know. But the point is, we got Drake over here. We've got Stormzy over here. They're both rappers. They're both in the music industry. Like, I don't know if they're friends, but chances are they've rubbed shoulders with each other. So what do we think about Drake? Like, messaging another woman when he knows she's in a relationship. And I guess, anyway, like, where do you draw the line with anyone when it comes to dating, like, their ex or their, you know, their friend or your colleague or your family members? Like, can you date their ex? Is it okay? Is it not okay? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Right, so firstly, my boy Audrey, Drake, Champagne Puppy, you're bang out of order, bruh. He went drizzy, he should have messaged her. Like, and I get Drake is a powerful guy who probably feels like he can have any girl in the world, but I think that was slightly out of pocket. Unless he was trying to message her on a business tip, which, you know, we will never know, I don't think he should have messaged her. And I do feel, there is a certain code. Do you know what? I don't even know if it's a code. I'm just trying to think realistically, right? So would I happily date, you know, someone who has dated my close friend? The truth is, no. When I was like 15, 16, 17, there was a bit of a weird entanglement with, you know, I don't know what episode it was that I mentioned it in, actually. So anyone's going to be like, she's a hypocrite. No, I'm aware that I did, you know, become entangled in a situation that I shouldn't have been entangled in, yeah. But I think as now I'm like, I just feel like I know that everyone is someone's ex, you know, so it's going to be difficult to get with someone who hasn't had a partner. But, you know, I don't want to be having sloppy seconds to a degree. And I think depending on how close that person is to me, you know, the closer the person is, the more off limits that their partner has been. And I just, true. Even like, and even like to think, okay, breaking up with my guy and then dating his brother, what kind of witchcraft is that? No. Isn't it?
You see, Linda, I'm gonna have to disagree with you about the Drake thing. Everything else I agreed, apart from the Drake thing. I don't feel like he did anything wrong. I'm so sorry. Stormzy isn't his best friend. That's not his pal. If you see somebody you think is attractive, shoot your shot. I understand the whole relationship. That onus is not on him. It's the onus on the person in the relationship to say, look, I've got this situation, so it's not going to happen, or you don't reply, which she did. He owes nothing. He saw a woman he was attracted to. He made his move. Like, to me, that's it. Like, and honestly, with these public relationships, sometimes it's hard to tell if they're still in a relationship or not. So he probably is thinking, well, I don't think they're together, and I'm not going to Google to figure out when the last time they saw each other was. I know she's hot. I like her. I'm going to DM her. Like, I think that was literally the train of thought. So I don't have a problem with that. Yeah. Dating somebody I know, like, I'm with Linda. I'm not a sloppy second girl. I just, it's not for me. Even if it's, I don't even know you well, but I know you were so-and-so's man. I don't want nothing to do with you. Because it's too sticky. Like, it's a no for me. I want a man that nobody has met, okay? Absolutely. Just me, Anissa, has met him. But this is also why I personally, I wouldn't say I'm a hider of men, but I do not...
Can I check your basement?
You can check my Facebook. I'm not a hider of men, but I don't bring my men around my friends. And this is wildly controversial. I don't bring my men around my friends. I don't post him on social media, and I don't even follow him on social media. I like as much distance between us as possible in that retrospect, because I don't want you around my friends. Well, one, I don't want you around my friends. But secondly, I don't want you to become pally-pally. When people become pally-pally, sometimes it's when the lines start to blur. So I just cut it all out. You don't know them. They don't know you.
But wait, Anissa, no, you just said, yeah? Sophie, please. I promise, yeah? Anissa, you just said, yeah, that if someone sees something they like, they should shoot their shot. So why
they should they mind if... That's why I'm not giving them the details to shoot their shot, Linda. They are not getting the details from me. You ain't getting the number. You ain't getting the talk at the table while you're getting a drink, and you ain't getting the Instagram. You ain't getting it from me, girl. No.
No, look. I do know what, Anissa, I was down with you until that last bit, because for me, I agree. Let someone shoot their shot. Like, if someone wants to come at my boyfriend, people came at my husband when he was my boyfriend all the time, and for me, I'm like, I don't mind it, because for me, I'm just like, first of all, I know that he's someone that other people want to get with. Yeah, that's why I want to get with you. You're attractive, yeah. You've got good qualities. But for me, I'm like, it comes down to a level of trust. Like, I don't mind people coming at you because I know that what we have is special. And let me make it very clear, Anissa, or anyone else listening, you cannot steal a person. Like, unless you kidnap them. Unless you kidnap,
I will make that clear first.
But my thing is, like, you cannot take a person that doesn't want to be taken. You can't take emotions that cannot be taken. So whether I shield you from all my people or not, that doesn't make a difference. He can find 10 Gallon Street who he wants to meet. Because for me, I'm like, it comes down to a trust. Like, I'm like, meet my friends, like, know my life. Like, I shouldn't need to hide you in order to feel like I don't want a line to be blurred. Because I'm like, is there trust there? That's for me.
Let me jump in. It's not because I want you to get pally-pally because I think they're going to take each other from each other. I don't want you to get pally-pally because I want everybody's loyalties to me to be absolutely to me. I don't want my friend becoming best friends with my partner, and then when I'm going through problems or something, like, all the loyalties are confused. I don't like that. If you're my friend, you're just my friend. If you are my man, and you have your own friend.
But here's the thing. A good friend should be able to tell you when you're acting up. So, for example, girls, right? Let me tell you. I'm this quick story, right?
Yes, girl.
I've got too many stories for you guys.
Quick story. So, imagine this, right? Yeah. So, okay, firstly, How do I tell this story? So imagine I was hosting an event. My man came to support me. And as we're sitting downstairs waiting for the event to start, I noticed this girl's looking at him. But I'm like, whatever, I'll tell him later, right? So then at the end of the event, everyone's congratulating me on being a superb host. And this girl comes up to my man, yeah? And she's like, oh, can you hold this bag? Can I take a picture of you holding this bag for my Instagram? And I thought, firstly, if you want to take a picture of anyone holding a bag, would it not be the person who hosted the event? But okay. So my man's like, to me, hold my drink. I put that drink on the floor. I am not your bystander here. Then she tried to be like, oh, what's your Instagram? And he was like, I don't have one, because he doesn't. And then she was like, oh, so how do you live? I said, he gets everything he needs from me. Thanks very much. Let's go. But, you know, that was about it. But that's just a side story. What I was going to say is, sometimes, you know, I don't really chatty patty my relationship with my friends. That's just a decision I've eventually come to. I mean, I say chatty patty, I mean, I don't tell them every single thing. But there are certain times when my advice to myself is not enough and I need to speak to someone who I know is of sound judgment and who will tell me, Linda, you're acting up right now. Or who will tell me, okay, Linda, maybe he might have done something wrong. I don't mean them to be best friends with my man, but sometimes you do seek outside counsel. That's the only thing I'm going to say.
Yes.
I mean, I'm definitely like a holding hands and going into the sunset kind of person. Like, I just feel like I would want everyone who's important in my life to be important to each other. And there's been so many times where I have been, where I've like made friendships from people who I love and I'm like, I'm bringing you guys together. And then a couple of years later, we're all friends on the same level. Like, that's a really beautiful thing for me. I agree with Sophie about like, no one can steal a person. And I don't like the idea of the whole sloppy seconds thing either, because we're not food. We're not left with lasagna. We are just people who fall in and out of love and move between relationships. And it's a very natural thing to happen. But I think sometimes people want like a setup, essentially, because even if someone who's in a relationship has no intention to cheat, they are very comfortable with entertaining other people who are messaging them because they don't want to feel like their current partner is their only option. And then from the other person's perspective, they want to feel so desirable that even someone who's in a relationship can't resist them. Like, I'm so irresistible. You've been in this long-term relationship, but now you've met me and the game's changed and that makes them feel powerful.
I guess, look, for me, yeah. Oh, gosh, I've got so much to say. I don't think it's always about... I do. I don't think it's always about sloppy seconds. Like, I'm someone who has dated guys who were friends and they were very, very good friends. How that story went was... I dated one of the guys and I didn't know at the time that he was dating a few girls. Like, and we were dating. We weren't going out. So he was dating. He didn't say. He was the only guy I was dating. He was dating multiple. He decided to go with one of the other girls. His decision didn't work out. Serves you right. So then I met his friend who I hadn't even met before. All this time me and him were dating, this friend was just never at the get-togethers for some reason. So when I saw him and we were kind of in a group together, I was just like, man, I have way more in common with the friend than I did with the first guy who I even dated. And then that kind of started, but it was difficult for him to kind of be like, that's my really, really good friend. So for me, where it's not always about sloppy seconds. Sometimes there might be a situation where you're like, actually, me and the friend just are better suited to each other. And I think it depends on what stage of your life you're in. Because if you're getting older and you're just like, I've broken up with them. I'm like, Linda, I like your ex. I know you dated 3 years ago. You could be like, I'm past that. Like, that is so in the past. Like, it's not even going to be... It's not even going to be a big deal. And I think, yeah, if you know that you're serious about this person, if it's like, I just want to fling, that's one thing. But if you're like, we seriously like each other, we seriously have a lot in common, me as a friend is not going to stand in the way and just be like, forget you then. You know, that's my... He was my ex. I'm married now, but you know, the code is the code. And I'd be like, do you?
Yeah,
I'm like, I'm happy. Go find your happiness.
Yeah.
But I think
even sometimes you meet people to meet someone else.
But yeah, not even that. But yeah, okay, you do that. But like, there are so many people in this world that, you know, I'm just... Don't get twisted. Like, I do agree with Anissa with the whole thing is I like a shy guy. I don't really want someone who's, you know, who's me. Okay?
I
don't
really want someone
who's me. I want you to be quiet.
What?
Anissa, you've got too many rules, girl. You've got rules.
Guys, there's so many men out there that like this. It's fine.
No, but you know what it is? I feel like, you know, opposites do complement each other. And, you know, I just feel like with the whole dating, because there are some friends, a group of friends that I'm not a part of, but they literally have dated each other. It's like a rolling roulette. I'm just like, there's so many people. No, it is. I'm like, there are so many people in this, in London, let alone in the UK, let alone in the world that, you know, you haven't met, just meet someone who's not in your circle. But I don't know, each to their own.
Yeah, I'm with you, Linda. I feel like there's so many men in the world. Like, I can just keep moving on. I don't have to hang around.
Technically, there's less men than women, though.
Oh yeah, that's true. But I just feel like there's like a connection is a connection. Like, we shouldn't put so many like rules on it. The only thing that should be important is like what Sophie said. Everyone should just be comfortable. If everyone's comfortable, then like, what difference does it make?
I think so. Would you feel comfortable?
What did you say, Linda?
Would you guys feel comfortable if, you know, like your best female friend went to date your ex and they became, you know, proper?
I guess for me, if it was me, there's probably only be one ex that I'd be like, that was a bit uncomfortable because it ended really badly. It wasn't a very good situation. Mm. And like, you were there, you saw it. So that would probably be the only person. But in general, like, who am I to stop people? Like, honestly, I feel like, who am I to stop people? Like, I know brothers that dated the same girl.
Now that you flip the script like that, Linda.
Hold on to your opinion, Lamanda.
I just actually pictured my best friend with an ex, and I'm just like, I don't want it to happen. Especially the good ones. Like, if you're not happy with me, you can't be happy.
I'm joking.
Girl, you're saying you're joking. You can't look at one of us in the face. Your eyes are like, you're like, I'm joking. I'm joking.
You know what? If anyone can take any of my exes, they're all happier without me, and they should be. So someone else take
Amen.
It.
Amen. Amen to that.
And I don't want them, honey, so take them. You just
went from a lot of men want this versus everyone's happy without me. Like, and you want to call me out on my contradiction?
Contradiction, that's not a contradiction. A lot of men like being quiet is what I meant. So that's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. So I just want to take this moment to remind everyone who's watching to like the video. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any videos from us. So we have been talking about the underrepresentation of Black women in the music industry, representing someone else's ex in your music, Drake. And now I want to ask you about the representation of mental health in the media. So recently, rapper Kanye West has announced that he's running for president, and that plus a string of now deleted tweets have led people to believe that he's experiencing a bipolar episode. Do you think that the media plays a responsibility in the role of the way that they represent people in the public eye who suffer from mental health? And do you think that Kanye is being honest about wanting to be the next president, or is this a publicity stunt?
Girl, you asked a lot of questions there. And to be honest, I can talk about Kanye in this situation all day. Like, I'm not kidding you. So I'm just going to answer one. Like,
did you call him Kanye?
Yeah.
Kanye. What do you call him?
Kanye.
Girl, I'm British. Kanye.
We're all British.
No, but he's British.
I think he was conning.
Look, I'm going to call him what I call him, innit? So, Kanye.
So,
I don't know if the media has a responsibility according to safeguarding someone's mental health. I don't know if I'll say that because I don't know anyone. I don't think anyone can know what someone's trigger is, like what might set them over the edge, what might be the wrong article to release. But I think there are journalistic standards in general and ethics that they should be adhering to. So, for example, it should be honest and accurate. And, you know, there should be some public interest there. Like, me knowing about what socks you wear during the day, there's no public interest in that. And, you know, it should be if someone has previous mental health conditions and we feel like they could be having an episode, then maybe now's not the best time to be writing about them. And I think that's where the media has overstepped in terms of Kanye, because he was in a Forbes article where they interviewed him about his run for presidency, and he was just saying some madness, honestly. He was talking about he wants to run it according to Wakandan policies, like in Black Panther, and he's anti-vaccines for coronavirus. He's talking about aliens. He started rapping in the middle of the interviews. Like, this is not somebody who's well, and whoever did that interview knew that. But they knew it was going to get likes. They knew it was going to get clicks. And they went ahead with it anyway. And in that sort of circumstance, I think there is a responsibility to be like, you know, if this person isn't well, we shouldn't be trying to put them on the platform when literally they're talking stuff that doesn't even make sense.
But you know what, guys? There's a fine line between someone who isn't well and someone who's just eccentric. And, you know, superstars, rock stars, rap stars, they are known to be extroverts and eccentric people. So to a degree, the person, you know, writing, the journalist who took part in that interview may not have even really clocked there was a big problem. And I think part of what you said, Sophie, I definitely agree with. I don't think, you know, the media necessarily has... The media don't know what's going to trigger someone. I think the responsibility lies with that person's friends, families, and to a degree their management as well. Because with Kanye, he's come out previously to speak about the fact he's been bipolar. And I think that's where his family should be very careful with regards to what he's able to get access with. Access to, should I say. I don't think him running for president is that crazy, because right now Donald Trump is president. So anything can happen. Anything can happen. But I just feel with Kanye... I actually worry for him. Like, I really want it to be a publicity stunt. And I think the thing you said about, you know, what kind of socks he's wearing isn't relevant. Unfortunately, we live in a day and age where a lot of fans feel so entitled to information about their favourite artist that they want to know socks, they want to know what they're eating for breakfast. So journalists have had to adapt to this new style of, before, the celebrity would be a mystery, would only know certain things. But now with social media, we see their every single move, and some fans expect that. So I don't think the media is completely at fault in this one. I think his wife... the people that call themselves his friends, the rest of his family and his management need to step in and make sure that he is okay.
I think that's such a tough one, because I agree with some of that, but I think journalists want to know. I can't believe that anyone goes into journalism to write puff pieces about what someone's favorite food is. Like, you want to make a comment, you want to make a difference, you want to talk about relevant issues, whether that's pop culture or current affairs. But the level of the way that we have taken over celebrities' lives and trying to pose it now as actual news, these journalists know it's not news. They're doing it because it sells. Like, that's why the Daily Mail is so hot. And I think it's very interesting in terms of what responsibility do Kanye's family and friends have over him? Because that's something that I was thinking. First of all, I was just like, Kim, come get your man. Like, what is going on? You should not be allowing him to do this. But when she released a statement saying it is very difficult to offer help to somebody, like, if he's not a threat to himself and to other people, which he isn't. He's at the moment, he's just saying some really outlandish things and making some very crazy statements. He's not a risk, so we can't do anything. We can't stop him flying. We can't take his phone. We can't stop him from setting up rallies in South Carolina for his presidential campaign. We can't do any of that. So I think it's really difficult for someone to step in. But I feel like the media, they know. I feel like we all know that Kanye is having an episode. I believe it. So... Yeah. They have a responsibility to not be putting him on the platform. There are other peoples to put on platforms. There's Cornel West, who's like an activist. There's D.L. Hughley, who's writing a book about racism. There's Jesse Williams, who's in Grey's Anatomy. If they wanted to profile what a black man has to say about the state of America and the best way forward, there are people. But they take...
But they don't.
What?
But they don't want to.
Who doesn't want to? The media or those people?
The mainstream media. The mainstream media.
But I don't disagree with you. That's why I'm saying I think the media, they're doing this not because they think that, oh, you know, well, fans are interested in it. They're in like, no, this is going to get us hits. People are going to click on our page.
Because they're interested.
It's both. I think I would never expect I'd never expect the media to be responsible for someone. Like, I think they should take all of these things into account, but I'd never expect them to. The low down dirty things that the media would do, like what you guys were saying for clicks, it's not a shock to me. But I also think, like, I kind of look at this from a little bit of a different angle, because I just think that, so first of all, let me just say that I don't want Kanye to be the next president, first of all.
Why?
However, because the next person's going to have to clean up a lot of mess, and we can't just double down on the mess just in a different, through a different lens. Like, no. So I don't want him to be president, but I think that black leadership is threatening. And the only thing more threatening than an alive black leader is a dead one. And assassinations aren't really going to work anymore, because you don't want to give the people something to riot for. You don't want to give the people a martyr. You don't want to give it to them. Yeah. You can't do that. So the fastest and the safest and the most effective way to take down a black leader is to defame them. I do not think it's a coincidence. Yeah, it's not a coincidence that every single time a black person in the public eye runs into career-ending controversy, they were just on the brink of doing something amazing for the black community. That is not a coincidence. Whether or not the controversy is true or not is a different story, but the timing of it is not a coincidence for me. So I think that the media have definitely ran with Kanye's most distracting statement, the thing that will be the most distracting to the black community, and publicized that the most, when he was actually also saying a lot of other truthful things. I mean, we were literally just talking about artists not being in control, and he said, I've designed for Adidas, but I'm not going to do that again if I'm not on the board of Adidas, because that's where the real power lies. And you guys don't ever see the people. Yeah. You don't ever see the faces of the people with the real power. He also mentioned about that girl. There was a, and I knew this already because my mum told me about this, but there was a dark-skinned girl who, a couple of months before Rosa Parks, actually refused her seat to a white woman, and she didn't fit the brand of the activist that they wanted. They did not make her the face because she was young, dark-skinned, unmarried, pregnant teenager. And then they had, like, nice and quiet and respectable and light-skinned Rosa Parks, and they pushed that instead. And she knew, Rosa Parks at the time. Like, Rosa Parks was, they were both in the NAACP together. They knew each other. So she knew, I can't be the face of the movement. She did this. It wasn't planned that she did it, but she did it. And she was manhandled, and all of those things happened to her. And she didn't really speak about it, because she knew that if I was the face, then people are going to be more distracted about who my the baby's father is and why she's having a baby out of wedlock and all of these other things. So we're not actually paying attention to the real things that he's saying, because everyone wants to focus on the most distracting statements, so that we're actually not having very, very important conversations.
And I agree with you on that, Luanda, because personally, I agree with everything you said, in the sense of, I feel like the media, especially with Kanye, so when this all started happening, I didn't really believe it was true. And that was because I wasn't going to check his Twitter for tweets.
Yeah.
I just kept seeing headlines pop up and things like that. And I just thought, okay, here comes the media again. They're weaponizing his mental health issues so that they could push an agenda. That was what I thought in my mind. And that's what I was having. Obviously, then I saw the tweets. And so then obviously it was a whole different thing. But I still don't think that negates. I do think that the media likes to weaponize certain things or certain truths maybe a person has come out and said with, to push a different agenda. So whether Kanye, like Randall was saying, may have said some positive things, we're only going to focus on the negative statements. Now, albeit those negative statements were extremely outlandish.
Of course people were going
to focus on it because it was so absurd. And, you know, he was saying some, whether they were truths or allegations about him and Kim and their family. Yeah. It was just too much, basically. I don't think the media has a point to safeguard anyone, really, because that's not really their job. However, I do think that as human beings, if I was in the media, I would think to myself, but why would I do this? Like, why would I write something so salacious against somebody that I don't know the truth in it? I think there is some journalism that has integrity and there's others that don't. And I think that's where the line needs to start being crossed, in that let's focus more on journalism that has a bit more validity versus like the blogs that are just going to tear people down, because we've seen what the effects are of negative media are onto people. Like, obviously you have to just look at Caroline Flack and what happened. That was a real thing that happened, and so the media were talking about it, but these I don't want to call out any newspapers, but these salacious headlines and things, of course, didn't contribute to what was already a very difficult time for her. But anyway, I'll sum up in what I'm saying, basically saying, I'm with Linda. I don't care if Kanye runs for president or not, because to me, it's about the same as Trump, so.
I care very much. I care very much about whether Kanye runs for president or not, because...
I love him.
It might, like, I don't think it's a prank. I think... This is just conjecture.
For where he
seems to be right now in his mental health, he seems serious. Like, he put his name, he registered his name with, like, the Federal Electoral Committee to say that he wanted to do it. He gave in a bill to say, I am going to run. He ran a presidential rally, which is, like, you have to put, like, $5,000 towards a rally or some event to show that you're doing. These are some of the criteria. So I think he's definitely trying to do that. And something that people have been saying is that if Kanye does this, what he could be doing is actually splitting votes. Like, people might vote for him when he has no chance of getting in. He's in too late. He isn't registered in enough states. Like, he hasn't done enough promotion. What he's saying is outlandish. So it's going to be a very specific type of person that's going to vote for him, as it was a very specific person that voted for Donald Trump.
I was going to say, Sophie, like all Biden, of those things that you literally just described Trump's campaign.
People who could be voting for, let's say, Biden, and I don't know enough about American politics to say who is a better fit, but anyone who is Donald Trump hopefully will help them to be in a better position. But Joe Biden, they're like, if he splits votes and takes people away from Biden, that could actually be votes that help to need... Those could actually be votes that might help him to get into the seat. So that's why it's so dangerous for Kanye to be like, I'm running, I'm going on the bill, vote, I need 20,000 signatures, because he could actually have an effect on the campaign, not by getting in the seat, but from prohibiting somebody else to get in.
Yeah, it's just like when the Green Party first started and everyone's like, it's a wasted vote. Don't vote for the Green Party. Yeah. But it's frustrating for me, because I just think, like, okay, like I said earlier, I don't expect the media to hold themselves accountable for the things that they do. But at the end of the day, because Anissa, you just said about, well, okay, but what if I was working in the media? At the end of the day, if you're a human who works in the media and you have an effect and you have a job in that sector, you have a job in journalism, how many more Caroline Flacks? How many more Caroline Flacks do you want there to be before we actually see a change, until we actually start taking care of people who need it, instead of just thinking about your promotion or thinking about how many clicks this Daily Mail article is going to get? Like, how many more?
But then us as consumers need to do better as well. You can't expect these journalists all of a sudden not to want to give the consumers what they seem to be interested in. So it's us as the people too.
Because the journalists the journalists aren't the ones making the decision. Again, like, every time we talk about a topic, the person on the shop floor is not making the decisions. It's the person who we don't see behind the scenes. So the journalists who write these articles, they know what their newspaper, what their magazine wants. They're like, this is the sort of thing we do, this is the sort of thing we cover. If you want to work here, this is what you have to do. But like Linda said, it's going to go part and parcel. It's going to take the corporations and the media and us as well to say, we're not going to endorse it, we're not going to read it, we're not going to click on it. Because as much as Caroline Flack had her own situation going on, like, this woman was hounded to the point where it did not help. It probably was a contributor. The fact that she had to move out of her house and go into hiding because people were just at her all the time. Like, this cannot happen anymore.
Yeah. It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. And so we're hoping for Kanye and Kim that they hopefully move on into a better place, because it's not a great time right now.
Yeah.
So talking about Kim and Kanye, we of course know that they're not any strangers to unusual names. Having named four of their children, I was getting the names, I was like, mesh it up, but like Chicago and Sam and Saint and North, very interesting names indeed. two parents in Derbyshire last week actually had to fight their local registrar because they basically wanted to name their son Lucifer. Anyone who's familiar with Christianity, that's basically another name for the devil.
God forbid.
So the registrar allegedly tried to fight them on this because they said that the child wouldn't be able to get a good job, no teachers would want to teach the child, and overall they just wouldn't have like a successful life. So what, on that topic, what's the most original name you've ever encountered, and how important do you think it is in defining your success and life in life? And is it time for our highly melanated people to give up the practice of giving their children anglicized names to help them get ahead in life and help avoid discrimination?
Unfortunately, the name that you have absolutely does affect your life. It unfortunately does. That's just the reality. As an example, there was a woman who has a name that kind of sounds like mine. Her name was Yolanda Spivey, or Yolanda Spivey, because I'm not sure how to pronounce it. But Yolanda, basically what she did was she kept her same, she was applying for jobs and she wasn't getting any replies. So she did an experiment for a week. She kept her same credentials on her CV. So everything that she, like she'd achieved, she kept it. She just changed the name at the top. And instead of Yolanda, she put Bianca White. So at the end of the week, Bianca had had 9 phone calls and 7 emails, whilst Yolanda had 0 phone calls and 2 emails, and I think one, or if not one, at both of them, both of those emails were the same as like something else that Bianca got. So it wasn't even something separate to what Bianca had received. So the evidence shows your name absolutely does affect your chances in life. So I don't personally blame black and brown parents for naming their children more British sounding names, but I don't personally think I'm going to be about that life when I do choose to have kids. And my name being Luanda, like, it's not that well known, but it is actually a capital of a country in Africa. So there really isn't a name that could say any louder, I'm black, to potential employers, you know? And I think that even, you know, even some of my siblings, I get worried when I travel them and I travel with them and we go to the airport, because I'm like, they're going to look at your passport, they're going to read this name, and they're going to get stopped. And every single time I go to an airport with them, I get scared, because I'm like, you're a dark skinned person with this type of name, something is going to happen to you here. And I've always got like one eye on each of them. But I do have to say that I love my name. And I'm really glad that my parents didn't give me any other name, because they know that the children, regardless of whatever barriers life had already set up before we got here, they know that we're all relentless to be successful. So
yes,
it's
yes, girl.
It is what it is.
You know, I love that. What capital? What
Angola.
Angola, hey. I love it. But what I do not love is Lucifer. just returning to that one. I think that what kind of stupid, and I don't want to say white people, but what kind of stupidness is that? Like, what, for what reason would you want? Anyways, I think the most ridiculous name I've actually encountered isn't that ridiculous. I'm going to say it anyway. If she's watching, she's watching. But it's Beauty. And I just feel like names like that really set up a child, you know, in a good and bad way. Some might say the face and the name don't match. Or the child might now, you know, grow this complex because of their name. And as for the Anglo name thing, I agree with Luanda. Like, our parents were very aware that we were coming to the West. You know, and I think if we stayed in our original heritage countries, then we would all have different names. But I think, man, it's Luanda, girl, you representing a period. But I do feel like our parents were aware of the struggles we were going to face being in places like the UK. And they did their best to make things a little bit easier for us. And I do feel like generations to come aren't having the exact same problems. Like, I feel people are embracing their cultures and their you know, African or traditional names, and making a standpoint that no, this is the name I want to be addressed by, this is the name that I have my birth certificate addressed me by that. I think that's a beautiful thing. I like my name, Linda. You know, I know it doesn't quite look like me. I remember some boys that I met, they were like, is there a Y and a H there? I'm like, no, it's just playing a normal way. But you know, I've learned to live with my name, I love my name, and I probably won't be naming my kids Linda. But you know, I don't know. I think names are a beautiful thing. I think it's weird because, you know, Linda means beautiful in Spanish. I'm just, oh, I don't know. Oh, Oh, in case you don't know.
No, honey.
Now, listen, I've been told so many times that each time I got to be like, are you serious? I know, okay?
For me?
People do love to tell you what the name of your
yeah, always.
Yeah. I think some crazy names I've heard, like I know someone whose like first name was More Blessings, like one name.
Sis, not yeah. just one, but More Blessings.
Wait, more guys, did you hear, you know T.I.'s son is called The Money?
Yeah,
because he always needs to get that money.
Who's
Demonic? T.I.'s son is called
Demonic.
Do you get it? Demonic.
Anissa, why do you keep putting an American accent on things to make it seem like it's going to sound better? It don't sound no better. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the way you say the money. It's the money. Like, you can't make that sound nice.
That's how T.I. and Tiger say with their country accent.
The money. The money.
They say it a different way.
Okay. Kanye.
But there's also like Sierra. She just had a son. She called him Win. Her other son's called Future.
I think
celebrities name their children some out there names. I think it's because they know they're never going to have to get a real job. Because I'm like, you know that you can't be calling your son Kal-El and they're going to go to school. Like, that's a real person.
I like that name. Though. That's
it's Superman's name, but come on.
And babe, you know what? So my name is Linda, so L. Carl's name is Carl. So I was like, babe, do you think we could get away with Carl? And he just side-eyed me.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I would side-eye you as well. I'd be single after that conversation.
But it is like my sister, she has a very British name, white British name like I do as well, Sophie. That's my real name. People always just like, really? I don't have many black Sophies. Is it like Sophia? I'm like, no, it's an E. Definitely.
I didn't stutter on my own name. Like, what exactly. people I get this that. All the time. When I say hi, I'm Luanda, and they're like, I'll just write down Miranda. Lucinda, was it? I said, do you know I got my own name wrong?
It happens all the time. So my sister, she's married a guy from Nigerian descent, and he said to her, when you apply for jobs, he's just like, apply under your maiden name. He was just like, don't even apply under my name, because he's just like, guys, they're not sad about it. He was just like, this is the way the world works. He was just like, and my sister, she's Rego, she'll still put her Nigerian surname, and people are like, how do you pronounce that? She was just like, how it's spelled. That's how you pronounce it.
She ain't got no chill.
But I think that if you're gonna name your child a name that isn't Western, just prepare them for what they're going to deal with, and let them, like Linda said, let them feel a sense of pride within their name, because people are going to pretend like they can't take the extra 5-10 seconds to get the pronunciation right, and that can maybe mess with, because we have all met people. And like you said, Linda, I think there's a wave starting now, but I definitely knew people from African descent when I was growing up who would give you their British name, who would say, oh, I can't pronounce it. Oh, don't worry, just call me like the first three letters or this, that, and the other. Yeah. Because it was kind of like, okay, I'll try and fit, because, you know, people don't want to make the effort. But it's like, if you're going to name your child a name that is difficult to pronounce if you don't make an effort, then you got to tell them, you tell them every time, this is how you say my name.
Yeah,
but yeah, they can say Zlatan Ibrahimovic. They can say that name very easily. But when it comes to
Zuckerberg,
I've never met anybody with like an outrageous name. I've just always heard people with their regular names. But I've always, as a child, just thought about, well, if I had kids, this is what my kids' names would be.
Yeah.
And they've always just been how I've been feeling in that moment.
Happy.
And what I've been by. I don't want to say what my specific kids' names are, because, you know, you have to just keep them secret.
Yo, we know you like to keep it secret just in case you want to steal it, right?
Yes. I don't want anybody having my kids' names, but anyway, but those, I picked those names because of how I was influenced. And so I think, like, my name, I wouldn't call it an English name, but it's a pretty standard, bog standard name. Everyone pronounces my name as Anissa, and the name Anissa is actually an Arabic name. So I always have people from that culture saying, oh my gosh, that's an Arabic name, and it means friendly. And I'm like, oh, great, great, great. But that's actually not even how you pronounce my name. But I just never correct people on how you actually pronounce my name.
How do you pronounce
it?
No, I go to explain.
Anissa.
I just
I decided when I was about 10 or 12 that I was not going to tell people the real pronunciation of my name, because that was for me and my family and us being personal, and then everybody else could call me Anissa, and that was what the line is. So that was my
own stage name. It's like a stage version.
That was my own personal choice. So if you actually pronounced it the way my mother had intended, then it would be a very ethnic name, to say the least. But because it's like just pronounced Anissa, and then I won't say my surname, but my surname is a very white name, and so it's
got a crease. Because
when you see my name on paper, people don't really know who I'm gonna be.
Who they're gonna get?
The second name is English, so they don't really know who I'm gonna be until I show up. And so I can say it works for my favor in that way. But that's speaking of privilege, because I don't have like a name that has lots of different letters or has 9 letters. I have a very short, concise name. That's what I was saying.
I think I've always been very protective of my name, because I think, so it's very frustrating that like people really try to pretend like it's hard to pronounce, and it's not. It's different and you haven't heard it before, so therefore like you dismiss it in your mind. I remember like there's been so many times I've introduced myself to someone, I'd be like, hi, I'm Luanda, and they'd be like, oh, well, I'm just gonna call you. And I said, no, my name is Luanda. There's only that's 6 letters. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah, that's what you call me. Like, my friends have nicknames for me, and that's absolutely fine, but it's not out of disrespect, it's out of affection. But me introducing myself to you for the first time, take 30 seconds to learn my name, because I never want to mispronounce someone's name. I want to call them how they want to be called. Like, exactly. Even if, you know, someone transitions and they change their name, like, tell me what your name is. Like, tell me what to call you. I want to give you that level of respect. I don't want people to be like, oh, never mind. I'm like, no, I'm standing in front of you. Break it down for me. Tell me how to pronounce it. I'll learn it. And then next time I see you, I can give you that respect, because it is your identity. It's your name. 100%.
And it should be unique, because every person is different. So I don't understand why people make such a big deal about different names.
Yeah. You know, have you guys heard that name called Rocket Inspector?
No.
I think it was like Captain Inspector. Yeah.
Yeah, do you know what? Because I used to love watching MTV.
Rocky. You could call it Rocky for sure.
Rocket. Like, but there's bare mad names. I was watching a show by actually from, I think it must have been on MTV. And you know, things like Apple and stuff. But Rocket Inspector had to be the mad one. But I think Sophie's right. It's because these celebrities know that their kids ain't gonna have to struggle for money, boy. They can be called whatever they want.
But at the end of the day, guys, okay, it might give us less of a chance to be seen for an interview if we have ethnic sounding names. But when we get to the interview, if that person's still not going to hire you, they're not going to hire you. You know what I mean? So it's only like a smidgen of helpfulness at the end of the day. And I love unique names. Like, you guys know Rebel Wilson, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, her sister's called Liberty, and I think that's the coolest thing ever. Like, you got like these two sisters. What's your name? Rebel and Liberty. Like, that's dope. That's the energy.
It shouldn't affect it, but like, I think it affects it in a big way, because it's like 60% of like ethnic minorities, they say, have to send in more CVs than white people. So it is, even just getting into that door to see them face to face is a massive boundary. So like I said, you just have to be aware of the fact what comes with it. But yeah, don't dampen your shine and be like, I want to name my child a name that I don't want to. Name your child what you want to name them.
Yeah.
It's honestly a privilege to me when people call me by my name, because everybody in my life calls me twin. So when somebody says Anissa,
oh my gosh,
I get so excited.
But how do we know you're you? But hold on,
how do we know you're you and you're not your twin?
Don't get me started. This is a short story, tangent, right? But the other day, I was on the phone to my mum for 37 minutes, right? Understand this. I know it specifically because it's when I hung up on her. I was on the phone for 37 minutes. She asked me at 36 minutes, who are you? I said, didn't you call me? You don't even know which one I am. Oh, but just tell me. But don't tell me. What am I saying? There's your phone as. Oh. And I said, you don't know who I am. Therefore, we are ending this call. And I hung up on her.
To be fair, because I was going to be like, she hung up on her mom. How could she? That's fair enough.
She doesn't even know who I am. So no, definitely no.
And on that note, we are going to be ending on you guys. Thank you so much for watching and listening to another episode of Ethnically Speaking. We have loved every single minute of it. And if you've loved it too, don't forget to give us a thumbs up. But help us to keep the conversation going. Like, what is the most obscure name you you have ever heard. Please let us know down below in the comments, write your answers, and next week we are going to be reading out the best ones. For a summary of everything we've been talking about today, head on over to unitedmelaningroup.com/ES007. The link is going to be in the description. If you've been watching us on YouTube, subscribe to our channel and click that notification bell so you don't miss a thing. We're going to be seeing you again the same time next week. But until then, stay safe and stay alone. Hey, it's Sophie here again. Thanks for listening to Ethnically Speaking.